Napoleon Hill was born in 1883, died in 1970. He was an American author in the area of New Thought Movement, one of the earliest producers of the modern genre of personal success literature. Now, he's widely considered to be one of the great writers on success. And his most famous work, Think and Grow Rich, which came out in 1937, is one of the best-selling books of all time. As a matter of fact, Think and Grow Rich has sold about 20 million copies, maybe even more. In a moment, Joel Fortinros joins us. Joel, of course, his book is My Life Contract. We're going to talk with him about the life of Napoleon Hill and how all of this success and self-help works next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you about Joel Fortinros. Joel is a vice president at the Penguin Group. Now, that's a publisher of the Tarcher imprint, founder of the Putnam Praise Publishing Program, co-founder of the Sacred Center New York. He is an ordained New Thought minister, motivational speaker, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Joel, welcome.
Thank you so much, George. Just a great honor to be here with you.
Gosh, lots to talk with you about. And I can't think of a better time to get people to look into success and motivation and self-help, because I think we all need it right now, Joel.
I do, too. You know, listening to the guests that came before me and listening to the news and just listening to the world around us, I think that people can have a real profound sense of feeling hopeless or not knowing what to do. And so turning to the works of people like Napoleon Hill and other great pillars of this kind of new thought or motivational literature, I think gives people a sense of empowerment and action and focus on what to do with their lives.
I gave a little description of Napoleon's career, and truly has sold a remarkable number of books. I mean, that's amazing. How did he get into this area of personal success?
Yeah, he was really interested in this in general, but his life really turned around in, I believe it was 1908, when he met Andrew Carnegie. And they met, and he had a lot of questions. And of course, Andrew Carnegie, who sometimes people pronounce as Carnegie, was the richest man on the planet. And so Napoleon Hill asked him question after question. And through his curiosity, Carnegie really encouraged him to study the science of success. So he opened up the doors to all the great titans of business at that time. And Napoleon Hill spent 20 years talking to these great wealthy people. And most of these people were not born into wealth. They were the self-made millionaires at that time. And he tried to find out if there were commonalities in their stories, things that they did that other people could emulate to become wealthy themselves. And through that study, he originally wrote a book called The Law of Success, which was actually a series of smaller books that I think came out in 1928. And then eventually it came to Think and Grow Rich in 1937, which of course just shifted the minds and lives of millions and millions of people ever since.
I mean, do we have modern books today, Joel, that sell 20 million copies?
There are a few, but very, very few. Sometimes a novel will sell that many copies, but there really is nothing like Think and Grow Rich that has lasted since 1937. Year after year, it continues to be near the top of sales in its category. I mean, I can't think of anything else that's really quite at the level that Think and Grow Rich is. And I think it stays there because it's so practical and it continues to help people. It's amazing to think that a book written in 1937 that has that language,
oh my gosh, yeah,
still inspires and motivates people.
Now, how did you get involved in this?
Well, I was broke.
That's honest.
That's honest, yeah. I was broke. I was like a lot of people. I had a huge amount of debt, and I kept trying to find different ways to get out of debt. And I was studying to be a minister at the time. I was working in a job in publishing that didn't have a very big paycheck. And I began looking at different books and philosophies. And when I came across Napoleon Hill, what I discovered reading Think and Grow Rich was that it really had two different aspects to it. There was the yin aspect and the yang aspect. So it wasn't just telling the actions. It also had this whole philosophy that was a little different than the other personal finance books that I read, which said save some money, don't use your credit cards, and that type of thing. Napoleon Hill went to a little higher step, which said change the entire way that you think. Change the entire way that you act in the world. Be a different person, and you'll get a different set of results. And it really sparked my imagination, and I began using those principles. And at the time, I had gone to a financial planner with all of my bills, and I had 23 active credit cards. Just, it was a mess. And the financial planner very excitedly told me that if I didn't do anything different, didn't spend any more money on my credit cards, that it would take 23 years to get out of debt.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my God. And when I started reading Napoleon Hill and using those principles, I got out of debt in 3.5 years. And it really enlarged my life in just so many different ways, not just financially.
What is his overall theme, Joel? What does he try to get across?
Well, if I could put it in two words,
sure.
His overall theme is burning desire.
Explain.
Yeah, what I tell people when I talk and teach classes on Think and Grow Rich is, it's not really about the thinking, and it's not really about the riches, it's really about growing. Because after about the, I don't know, umpteenth time that I had read the book, something really emerged for me that hadn't before, and that is that most of the stories in the book are about people who didn't set out to make money, they set out to discover their passion and live by their passion. And in the process of doing that, they ended up becoming wealthy or wealthier. So what I really understood was that wealth and riches to Napoleon Hill was not so much money-based, although that's certainly part of it. It really was passion-based. And over and over and over in the book, he uses the term burning desire. What is your burning desire? What will get you out of bed in the morning? What will make you so excited that you just can't wait to do it every single day? And if you read through Think and Grow Rich, it really is about focusing you and making your compass pointed towards your passion in life.
Is this the art of positive thinking, or is that much more than that?
I think it's more than just positive thinking. Although that's certainly a part of it. And positive thinking, a lot of the positive thinking gurus that came after Napoleon Hill used a lot of the material in Think and Grow Rich in their works, the Dale Carnegies and Robert Schuller's, et cetera. But I think it's more than that, because in addition to thinking, if you read through his book, Think and Grow Rich, he has 13 steps, and it goes beyond thinking. Some of the steps are things like imagination and desire, decision. And he even has a chapter in there on what he calls sex transmutation, which is harnessing that kind of physical desire into creative outlet. So positive thinking is one of the aspects, but there are a lot of other aspects as well. And he even delves into a lot of the human foibles, like what are the things that we fear most in life, and what are the alibis that we use most in life. And he really understood the human character and condition just so well.
Let's get into then your writings, Joel, and you have springboarded on Napoleon's theories and carried it forward, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I'm from the Midwest, and in the Midwest, we like things pretty, you know.
So whereabouts, by the way? Me too.
I grew up in Nebraska.
Okay.
And then I lived in Denver, Colorado for 10 years.
Detroit for me originally.
Detroit. So we're Midwesterners in heart.
Yep, we sure are. We sure are.
What I got from that upbringing was, you don't have to make it fancy, and you don't have to, you know, give me glitter. Just tell me what to do, and I'll do it. Just give me the basics. And I'll do it. So when I got into Napoleon Hill and Think and Grow Rich, and also some other thought systems as well, such as The Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes, and The Game of Life by Florence Scovel Shinn, and a number of those books, what I began to discover is that underneath all of those books were some very simple commonalities. And as soon as I saw that, then I saw it everywhere I went. If commonalities in that you can see in the recovery movement or in Weight Watchers or in any of those kinds of programs that try to get you from one place to another place. And I like taking things that are, you know, that look larger than they are and simplifying them so that people, including myself, can take these easy steps, step by step, to really fulfill the passion in life.
How long does it take? In your case, 3 years, is that average?
Well, I had a lot of debt. So I had almost $60,000 worth of personal credit card debt at the time. And so 3.5 years was pretty quick. But it goes as fast as, or slow as you put your energy and your attention on it. I threw myself into it. It became a real consuming passion for me to get out of debt at the time. And then I began using that same formula, that same program to do other things, to become financially prosperous and to advance my career or find a soulmate, a family. But it depends on what it is that people are interested in. In my book, My Life Contract, I tell people, just begin with 90 days. Just spend 3 months, 90 days, moving toward the thing that is your burning desire.
Almost like a test, isn't it?
Like a test. And if you can do it for 90 days, first of all, people are so amazed at how far they can go in just 90 days. But if you can do it for 90 days, suddenly you are on a new path. And you've developed new habits, and you really have opened up your life. You begin to feel empowered. You begin to see that life can work differently for you than the way it has before. And, you know, if people can just commit for 90 days, and I make it so simple that it's just baby steps every single day, that they really will surprise themselves by the success that they discover.
And it's for just about everything in life, isn't it? Jobs, relationships, health, it's everything.
It's everything. You know, I'm actually using my own book right now to lose weight. I had gained some weight over the last year, and I thought, I've got to get this off. How am I going to do it? And I thought, well, of course, I'm going to use this same process that I've used for every other thing. And so about 5 weeks ago, I picked up a copy of my own book and began using it. And I'm at 19 pounds lost in 5 weeks so far.
That's amazing.
You can use it for anything, because really the power of the mind is really the power of focus. And wherever people are at in their lives, they already know what it is that they want and what will make their life better. Oftentimes it's money, but oftentimes it's also relationships or, as you said, health issues. And they can use this program, this process, for anything.
What if they don't believe in it or believe in themselves? Will it fail?
Well, yes, it will. There's a great old saying from a New Thought author which says the pessimist is right and the optimist is right. So it really does require that you do suspend a little bit of disbelief and just give it a chance. And like I said, if you just give it a chance for 3 months, see what happens. If it doesn't work out for you, nothing ventured, nothing gained, go back to the life that you had. But I've never actually seen it not work for people who actually enter into this with an open mind. And also, what a lot of these great old New Thought authors, Napoleon Hill especially, would say is that people who have a negative feeling about this or feel like they don't believe in it and that their life reflects that not belief in it, is that they're actually using these principles successfully in a negative way. And so if we can actually just use these principles and turn it around from a negative point of view to a positive one, even just a little bit more positive, you'll begin to see a different result. After all, a lot of this is common sense. The power of the mind, what you focus on grows for you.
Right.
That seems very common sense. And yet, doing it, actually doing it, becomes very powerful.
I think a lot of people, Joel, do something and they know their gut tells them, don't do it, it's not going to work for you, and they go ahead and do it anyway, and they always get caught or something happens.
Yeah. Well, something's going to happen no matter what. Whether you do it or not, something's going to happen. So if you're actually on a path towards positivity, at least you're surrounding whatever happens in a positive way. And you know, George, I was one of those people growing up in Nebraska. I always felt like I was the least lucky person. I always felt like I was one of those people who had missed the class one day where they told you the secret of life.
Yeah.
And I always felt like I was the person who would never get ahead. I was really going to be destined to a life that was going to be unhappy. And that's not true. If it was not true for me, then it's not true for you or anyone else. And let me tell you, in Western Nebraska, there was nobody famous to know or to help. You know, there are no Kennedys out in Western Nebraska where you could help and, you know the right people. There's not a lot of resources, or there wasn't at that time. And so if even coming from that isolated place, I can take these principles and turn it around and use it to really just springboard my life. And over the years, I've been teaching this now for over two decades. I've just seen it happen over and over and over in people's lives. And it's very exciting because it's so simple but so powerful.
Give us an example on what it is. Is it psychology? What happens?
It is psychology. I would say that it is conscious direction of your conscious and subconscious mind. So what you do is, in a nutshell, one of the things that I ask people to do in my life contract is to, first of all, think of the thing that it is that they want. And for some people, that's a material thing. It certainly was for me for many years. It was money. But for other people, it's a quality, maybe spiritual quality, or I want to be a more peaceful person, whatever it is, whatever that goal is. One of the things that I have people do that is just so, it seems so basic, but is so powerful and so hard to do until you get into the groove of doing it, which is every morning, just take 5 minutes and say, this is my goal. What am I going to do towards this goal today?
It's like an affirmation, right?
Like an affirmation, but you write down maybe some actions. And at the end of the day, you take another 5 minutes and you say, how'd I do? And just in that simple act of starting every day and ending every day with the awareness of what it is that you wanted for the day, you begin to develop a rhythm, because you'll see that if you have that awareness at the start of the day, before you turn on the news, before you hear all the bad news, before anything else, you start at that highest level of consciousness, then it permeates the rest of your day. And at the end of the day, you can look and say, well, I did this part good, not this part not so good. Tomorrow I'll do better. And that little 5 minutes at the beginning of the day and 5 minutes at the end of the day, and I actually, in the book, My Life Contract, I actually have 90 pages so that people can really track it. It begins to build on itself every single day, like compound interest, and you begin to see new patterns emerge, new habits emerge, and your life really does begin to focus more on the things that you want rather than trying to get away from the things that you don't want.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment, Joel. We'll talk more about this Think and Grow Rich. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls. And I'm really interested in how you would use this, how you would apply this to change your own life when we take your calls. We'll be back. Check out my calendar schedule, especially for November. I'm all over the map. November 8th, I'll be in Toronto, Canada, major event at the Queen Elizabeth Theater. And then a week later, I'll be in Laughlin, Nevada at a major UFO conference. And if you're in these areas, come on by. I'd love to see you. Information at our calendar at coasttocoastam.com. How do you find that? Well, you go up to the host section at the top of the page, click that, and that opens it up. Or it says it at the bottom of the homepage. Calendar. Simple as that. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Do you think a psychologist uses these techniques, Joel, when he's dealing with a patient?
I think they do. I actually get emails and have gotten some letters from different forms of psychologists, psychiatrists, or therapists saying that they like the idea of using a positive way to move forward every single day. And the way I explain it in my life contract is I call it C&P, consistency and persistency. Consistency means doing something positive every single day. Persistency means especially those days that you don't want to. And that certainly is congruent with a lot of different schools of thought and psychology and other disciplines as well. I've heard from sports psychologists, and certainly a lot of business people use this, and salesmen, entrepreneurs. It's just that idea that as you keep moving forward positively, you're going to have a more positive experience. And I think that that really resonates with a lot of people.
Why do people need, and I agree that they do, Joel, but why do they need self-help pushes, like with your work, with your books, with what Napoleon Hill did? People need this, but why?
Well, one of the reasons is what we talked about earlier, which is I think now more than ever in this world that we're living in, people really do have a sense of powerlessness. They have a sense of being paralyzed by fear. And so I think that a lot of those people really are reaching out, trying to find something to get past being gripped with fear and finding something that they can do. I mean, life goes so fast, and it's just remarkable how fast life goes. So when we want to decide to live it fully, we need help, and I certainly did. And so I think that's one of the reasons. Another reason is I honestly believe that people really are born with a sense of purpose within them, their own unique purpose. And so it takes a lot of energy to keep that purpose stuffed inside of ourselves. But when we begin to find some sort of method or book or teacher or method of philosophy that helps us to uncover what it is inside of ourselves, our life purpose, it begins to add meaning to our lives. And ultimately, isn't that what we all want? We all want our life to feel like it meant something. And so I think those are probably some of the main reasons people want and use this material.
Joel, because we're all human, you know, we're subject to those ups and downs of life, no matter what. Tragedies, you name it, we go through it. Does this help that?
It does. First of all, having a sense of forward movement, I think, is just tremendously helpful and a great psychological boost as you move through anything. That's when you are in a positive place and something happens in your life, you tend to deal with it more positively versus when you're stuck or in a negative place. So we use it in that way. The other thing, though, is just by becoming aware of some of those things that stop us or those human foibles, I think just the awareness of what they are and how we might participate in them helps us to make different choices. In Think and Grow Rich, for instance, Napoleon Hill talks about what he called the six basic fears of life. And he ranks them in order of how he thinks that they grip people or stop people. And fear of death or fear of illness were not the top of his list. Actually, the top of his list, the top two, were the fear of poverty, losing it all, not having something. And the second one is the fear of criticism. And even though this book came out in 1937, this fear of criticism in this day and age of social media, where people can anonymously criticize and tear down people, I think is even more true now than ever. And so to find ways to go beyond fear of losing everything, fear of criticism, and the other fears is just a tremendously empowering way to go through life.
Joel, you've got an exercise in your book, My Life Contract. You call it Sitting for Ideas. Tell me about that. What is that?
That is actually an exercise that I borrowed from Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich. Back in 1937, when that book came out, there really weren't self-help books. And so they weren't written in the way that self-help books are today, where you have exercises and maybe reflection questions. But somewhere buried in his book, he talks about this inventor who would go into a room by himself with a pad and a pencil, and he would sit there with a idea in mind for an invention, and anything that would come up in his mind, he would write down on this pad. Well, I loved that idea. I thought, what a great idea. Maybe I can adapt this to my life. And I started doing the same thing. I would sit in a room quietly. I'd have a pad and a pen with me. And I would just bring an idea into my head. Sometimes it was, what do I need to do today? Other times it was a problem or a situation, maybe at work or in my family. And I would just sit there and allow maybe this different part of my mind, or some people might say the higher part of our mind or something beyond, bubble up. And every single thing that would come to my mind, I would actually write down on this pad. I wouldn't judge it. I wouldn't think about it. I just wrote it down, and then I'd become quiet again and see what else would come up. And at first, I would spend quite a bit of time doing this. I'd spend 15 minutes or 30 minutes doing this. Now I can just kind of plug into that place very quickly, and it only takes me a few minutes. But what I notice is what would come up during those times, those sitting for ideas times, were the very things that helped propel me forward. And sometimes, by the way, they were the very things I didn't want to do. But by doing them, I would create forward momentum or new energy. But oftentimes they were things that I would look at and I would think, I wonder what this was. I remember one of the examples was somebody from my high school popped up in my head, and I thought, I wonder, I haven't thought of that person in many, many years. But in this day of Facebook and social media, I was able to find them, and I just reached out to that person, and she wrote back within seconds saying, oh my gosh, I just was thinking of you as well. And in the course of our back and forth, she ended up needing some of the services that I had for her life. And it ended up being this great connection that was beneficial on so many levels for both of us. And that came up through just sitting for ideas. So it's a great way to begin every day, even for people. They can just sit there and say, what is mine to do today? Or think about a person that maybe they're having an issue with and say, what is the right thing to do here? And then just be quiet and see what comes up and write down on a pad if that feels comfortable, and just, and then do whatever that higher consciousness that bubbled up, just do the action that it says to do.
What if people get impatient, Joel? You know, we live in an era now where we want immediate results.
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
Well, when people get impatient, when they take one of my classes where we use these materials, and within a few weeks they get very impatient and they come up and they say, I'm impatient, I want results now, the first question I always ask them is, are you doing this consistently? Are you doing the work that we talk about in my life contract consistently, every day, twice a day, right in the morning, right in the end, and the other tools, such as sitting for ideas and the other tools outlined? And they'll always say, almost 100% of the time, no, I just want what I want now. So my answer to the people who get impatient is, do the work. Do the actions that are going to propel you forward. And if you find yourself getting impatient, use that very feeling to double down and to propel you even further into doing the positive actions. I mean, I'm somebody who likes what I want, when I want it, in the way that I want it myself. And I notice, though, that when I focus on the goal and take positive steps toward it, I actually achieve it even faster than I think I was going to do it. So if people are impatient, hunker down, continue walking forward, do the work consistently and persistently, and it really does open the doors.
So where do people go next with trying to face what's going on this planet right now to pull themselves up from where they are right now? How do you start?
Well, that exercise, sitting for ideas, is a great place to start, because people do feel like they want to participate in positive change on this planet. And there's a lot of different ideas and a lot of different organizations and people and ways to do that, but they want to know where to start. And I think that when we do something so simple, such as sitting for ideas, it helps us to filter all of the possibilities, and the one that will come up or the two that will come up are the ones that maybe are our best possibilities. Because, boy, I think many of us would love to do everything to try to help this planet. We'd love to give money. We'd love to volunteer. We'd love to travel to this place. We'd love to vote for the right people and campaign for them and this and that. But in my experience, and maybe many other people's experience, when I try to do everything, none of them seem to be very effective. But when I really do focus on those things that speak most to my heart or speak most to my talents, then I become much more effective in being a positive force of change in the world. So sitting for ideas is a very simple exercise that people can do. And if they want more specific instruction on how to do it, just it's right in the book, My Life Contract.
You've worked with a number of authors who have different claims about being, ministers, preachers. Who has influenced you the most outside of Napoleon Hill?
Of specifically the authors that I've worked with?
Yeah.
Well, there's so many of them. A couple come to mind. One is Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way, because The Artist's Way is a program for discovering that we are all creative beings. But in working with Julia and seeing how she lives her message, after having worked with a lot of authors who aren't necessarily who they are behind the scenes as they are in front of the scenes, when I see somebody like Julia who lives the message day in and day out, that influenced me greatly because she really lives the message that she teaches. She always calls herself the floor sample of her books. And the other author that comes to mind is a gentleman named Bishop T.D. Jakes, who is a Christian minister based out of Dallas, Texas, and he's been doing some work on Oprah's network recently. And he, to see the commitment and passion that he has for the work that he believes in and the level of excellence in which he does it and how smart he is really did influence me a lot. I worked with him for about a decade, I think. It's been a number of years ago now, but he really truly influenced my thinking and the way that I try to walk through the world greatly. There's been many others as well, but those were the two that popped in my head as you asked that question.
Have you gotten to a point even in your personal life, Joel, where you've tried, and it just didn't work?
Well, no, I would say I haven't, and one of the reasons is when something really feels like it's stuck and that it's not working, I use a form of that exercise, sitting for ideas, to find out what it is I need to learn about this situation. For an example, there was a person that I had a friendship with for many years, and we were completely at loggerheads at one point, and I thought that this was going to be the end of the friendship. I tried, and I tried every different way I could think of to make things work and reach out and solve things, and nothing seemed to help. And so one day I just thought, let me take this into the sitting for ideas exercise and see what comes up. And what came up was, let it rest for a while, and when it's the right time, you'll know, and then reach out again. And just having that permission to let it rest, let it be. And then several months later, in sitting for ideas, the exercise, that person's name popped up again for me, and I reached out to this person again, and it was just the exact right moment. We were able to say what we needed to say and move forward in a way that was better than ever. And so when I see situations with work that seem not to be moving forward, when I stop and reflect and say, why am I trying to force something to happen that maybe shouldn't happen? What's a different way that I can see this? Then it ends up being something even better than I thought. So a lot of it is reframing it into something that's more positive for you if you feel like it's just not working.
Do you have to be particularly spiritual also?
I don't think you do have to. I think it helps because I think that spirituality gives us a sense of our larger place in the world. But I don't think you don't necessarily have to have a spiritual bent to it because there really is that common sense aspect to it. But gosh, for me, it certainly helps. But I'm a minister, so...
And that's an interesting paradox, too. I mean, you're a minister on one hand, you're a business person on another, you're doing these different things. Is that easy to balance for you?
It is now. It wasn't for a while because I kept thinking they were two different things. And then I finally had a realization that they were two aspects of the same thing, which is what my life purpose is, what my journey is. And what I like about being both a businessman and a minister is that I can go into spiritual organizations and bring in business ideas, which help balance out that world. And I can go into business organizations and do a lot of speaking or workshops or consulting there and bring in maybe some spiritual ideas, you know, not using certain language or changing the language to make it appropriate, but bring in those ideas and that balances that part of the world of and so they go together. It's that yin and yang and being able to bring that balance to both worlds that I live in.
You enjoy doing what you're doing, too.
I love it. I love it. It really is. When we talked about Napoleon Hill and his idea of burning desire, I'm living my burning desire every single day. I get to go into my day job in New York City and create books that make people's lives better. And I get to be a minister. I get to write books. I travel and speak and give workshops and really work with people in small group settings. And it just couldn't be any better.
Favorite book of all time, Joel?
Favorite book of all time? Well, I would probably have to say The Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes for a nonfiction book. What is your favorite book of all time?
I'd like to say mine, but I can't. The Bible.
The Bible, that's a, well...
How about that? I think it's a great book with an incredible story.
Mm-hmm.
All the way from Genesis to the Book of Revelation. I mean, it is... beyond what any human could do, you know, the great writers of our time, Hemingway, Thoreau, all of them. But the Bible, to me, is the greatest book.
It has every aspect of our lives in that one book, and it also helps place us in that larger sense of that there is a cosmic plan and that we actually have a role in that cosmic plan. And it's so great to see in the Old Testament the lessons you can learn of, you know, the Lord always saying, just look at me, just trust me first, and make me your God. And people say, yes, absolutely. And then, you know, 5 seconds later, they're worshiping a golden calf. And seeing how our humanity becomes so... distracted by the things around us instead of what is the most important to us.
Joel, we're going to come back and take stories and phone calls for you next.